Good morning, Portland. Anybody see the paper today? Am I the only one, really? Would you mind if I read to you Doonesbury today? Anybody mind that? If anybody minds, I won't. The first panel shows Zonker Harris looking out over a valley. Could be the Rogue Valley, could be the Applegate Valley, could be the Willamette Valley, saying, could there possibly be a better career as he's looking out over his crap? The second panel shows him in a room with hanging buds and jars, and it writes, such a good fit. The next panel is Mark Slackmeyer, who's the, I think that's his name, right? The guy who's the radio guy? So, off panel, it says, hey, gay person. And Mark goes, who, me? Yeah, you. Yeah, been a big year, right? All the excitement over gay marriage. Yeah, I guess it's been pretty awesome. And so then Zonker and his, what's his nephew's name? The other Zonker, kind of? I don't know. Are in the panel with Mark, and it goes, but along with attention comes pressure, no? Zonk, where'd you come from? Yeah, sometimes it seems overwhelming. For moments like those, wouldn't you like a premium cannabis product to take the edge off? Well, you're in luck. My uncle and I are proud to announce Z&Z Bud. And it's a little jar with buds in it. The artisanal dope, especially formulated for the gay stoner. Z&Z Bud. You won't be sorry. And then there's a thought balloon over Mark. Gay grass? Safe for transsexuals, too. Try it today. We're also in the paper today about the city of Portland regs and the prices for them, and we'll talk about that in a minute. I have some preliminary matters. I've been doing this work a long time. I've been over 20 years and looking after patients and their providers, and now advising businesses on compliance. I'm Oregon Cannabis Business Compliance Council LLC, along with Leah Flynn, who's my legal assistant and an office manager, and I helped draft the medical law, and I helped draft 91. And the thing to remember about Measure 91, especially at a business conference, especially at this business conference, because this is really the only business conference that you'll go to where you're going to hear from activists, whether they're activist lawyers or activist store owners or whoever, and politicians. It's important to remember that we didn't pass 91 to create an industry. We passed 91 to end arrests and prosecutions of responsible adult users. That's where we passed it. The industry itself, the creation of the industry itself, is the portal through which that's allowed to happen, because in politics, you know, we have to convince people who aren't consumers at all that they should vote for it. And the way that we were able to do that was by saying, well, what if we give it to the agency that regulates poison, you know, stuff that actually kills people, like alcohol, you know, and that, there isn't a good response to that if you're a soccer mom concerned about your child using. Well, that's probably the best way to regulate it, and so that's how we end up with the industry. But the industry has, I think, an important responsibility, because reform is not over with ending arrests, with being able to grow four plants and possess an ounce anywhere, because there's still cannabigotry. And there's cannabigotry not just in local control, which is what we'll be talking about later today, about the mayors and city councilors and county commissioners who aren't as enlightened as our friend from Coquille is, but we're talking about cannabigotry in the workplace. We're talking about cannabigotry. You know, Sid Maurer is going to be here later today. She can speak really eloquently to that, and looks a lot more normal than I do. In housing, and in licensing for certain kinds of professions, and so the way that marijuana is going to become more normalized is through the industry doing good things. So, you know, Chelsea Hopkins, who was here yesterday, her and her husband Joe Hopkins have the Greener Side in Eugene, they sponsored the Oregon Golf Classic and donated the proceeds to the Oregon Multiple Sclerosis Association. That's the kind of stuff we need to be doing. I want to see your dispensary sponsoring a Little League team in talent. I mean, that's the kind of stuff. We need to become such a normal part of the business community that that people are going to say, yeah, why should we test people's urine just because they're consuming, as long as they're not impaired when they're working? I want to, joining the chamber, that's a really good point, too. I need to give another shout-out. Back at the beginning of the medical marijuana program, there was a program director who was not hostile to patients and their providers, Kelly Page, would you stand up for a second? Kelly Page was the first director of the Oregon Medical Marijuana Program, and she stayed involved. She was, at the time, a gift from the gods, so be sure and give her a hug when you see her later today. Are there other lawyers here today? Are there other Oregon lawyers here today? Are there Oregon lawyers here today who have not signed for the cannabis law section that we're trying to start up? Can you keep your hand up? Leah, can you get to those people to get them to sign? I don't see you. Are you? There you are. Can you keep your hands up so Leah can see you? There are currently, for non-lawyers, within the Oregon State Bar, there's a series of sections. For example, I'm a member of the appellate section, of the criminal law section. And now in Colorado and Michigan, and we're trying to get it started in Oregon, there's going to be a cannabis law section so that cannabis lawyers can talk to each other and do the kinds of things Michael was talking about dispensary lawyers collaborating. And the fact is, whether you're a lawyer or a dispensary or whatever, there's enough work for all of us, and we need to be collaborating. And one way we can do that in Oregon is through creating a cannabis law section. I've been collecting signatures at these events, and so, you know, it's not likely to happen January 1st of next year, but hopefully by January 1st of the following year. But one thing we were able to accomplish this year, I'm very proud to be a founding member of the board of directors of the National Cannabis Bar Association. And if you are a lawyer involved in cannabis work, you ought to go to our website. It's canlaw.org. canlaw.org, and actually the fees that we're looking at now are pretty low, and the board's talking about extending them to the end of the year, but there's no certainty about how long that's going to go on. But we're going to be building a database of lawyers so that people can, as Michael accurately points out, not everybody's an expert in everything. I like to think I'm an expert in compliance work. I work with Cole Haver on intellectual property work and business formation, with Robert Graham, who you heard from yesterday, on business formation and securities law, and with a lawyer named Ross Day on land use and zoning stuff. Anyway, because everybody can't know everything, and so that's how I'm set up. So today, I'd like to talk about the early adult use sales. Can I hear adult use? One more. Adult use. And with a little feeling. Yes! Thank you. I want to talk about early adult use sales. I want to talk about, are people interested also in hearing about the retail, the adult use retail that's coming? Okay, so if time permitting, and Ngayo or Alex, if you can let me know when I'm getting close to being done, I'll do that. So, early adult use sales. So the first thing is that the health authority, which has undergone a serious change recently, a top to bottom change for medical marijuana. The medical marijuana program person has changed. The person responsible for the medical marijuana dispensary program has changed. The medical marijuana dispensary program is merging with the medical marijuana program. The person supervising that has changed, and the head of the agency has changed. And when the head of the agency testified to the legislature, she didn't even know there was an advisory committee on medical marijuana. It was astonishing. So it's a real sharp learning curve with these folks. It's kind of looking, from an enforcement standpoint, like we may be Has anybody had, well, no, you don't want to raise your hand for that, but I represent, people go to lawyers when they have got problems, you know, and so I've seen folks who've been visited by the inspectors and have been cited for violations, and I've been successful at, you know, fixing and correcting the violations so that the store could reopen 10 days later. But the, currently I have a case where there's a notice of suspension and of revocation of license, which is just a very aggressive move. And it wasn't for the things that we were expecting that would happen for. You know, if there's a significant difference between what comes in and what goes out that's more than 5%, you know what I'm talking about, yeah? Yeah? Okay. Or use on site. I mean, when Tom Burns was running the program, those were the two things that we were told, this will get you shut down. And now it's even more important, as Michael pointed out, compliance, compliance, compliance. And it's only going to get more complicated. From my perspective, when I say looking after patients and their providers, I mean practicing, you know, exclusively criminal law. And when I shifted to look after businesses, I was worried about being bored, frankly. And so far, not boring. So the way that rulemaking happens is that there are draft rules that are proposed, and on the medical side, they just propose them. On the adult use side, they created a rules advisory committee with a series of subcommittees, and the things are filtering up to the commission. And then they promulgate what are called draft rules, and then final rules. So a couple of weeks ago, draft rules came out, and there was an opportunity to comment on them. And, you know, of greatest concern, and this was in the Oregonian, was it looks like they're trying, it's a little ambiguous, you know, so I'm not sure. But certainly Steve Wagner, who's the bureaucrat that looks after the medical marijuana program, the medical marijuana dispensary program, thinks that we're not going to be able to live out of state and be a patient in Oregon. And that's not legal. That's the case I litigated lost, but it changed the law. You know, absent some kind of reciprocity, it can't possibly be legal to exclude out-of-state patients, but they're thinking about doing it. Anyway, for the most part, insofar as the early adult use sales are concerned, the rules track the statute. The statute is Senate Bill 460. And as Floyd Przanski, the state senator from Southern Lane and Douglas counties, mentioned yesterday, when you go to the Oregon legislative website and you click on text, the version you want to look at is the enrolled version. And unlike 3400, which is 111 pages, 460, I want to say, is three or four pages. And basically, you know, it defines limited retail marijuana to be a quarter ounce of flowers, seeds, or starter plants. At one point during the legislation, they limited the number of seeds or starter plants to four, but it doesn't say that. And I also want to give a shout out to Sam Chapman from New Economy Consulting. He, more than anybody else, is responsible for making sure that seeds got into our marijuana legislation. And, you know, it's something we overlooked when we were drafting the medical. It's something we overlooked when, but not everybody uses clones. There's a lot of serious geneticists and people who have medical marijuana dispensaries are going to be able to sell seeds to adults as well as starter plants. As well as a quarter ounce a day. If you want to do this, if you want to be able to sell to adults, you know, this limited cannabis, the quarter ounce of flowers, seeds, and starter plants, you have to give notice to the health authority 5 days before. You're going to have to verify that the person is over 21 that you're selling it to. You don't have to do the stuff that you do with the patients where you scan the card and the material and keep track of their identifying information. The only thing you will need to do at the point of sale is to note the birth date so that there's some record of the person. The person is over 21, and then there's a series of signs that they're requiring that you post. They're requiring you to post a pregnancy warning poster. More about that in just a minute. A poisoning prevention poster, a thing oddly not required at liquor stores, which actually is poison. And educate before you recreate a flyer. And you're required at the time of sale to distribute a marijuana information card. And then, you know, you're required to comply with all security, testing, labeling, packaging. Except that you're allowed to sell to adults. There's no tax until January 4th, and then there's a 25% tax. And the whole thing sunsets December 31st of next year. I mean, what happened at the legislature was, and interestingly, it was the same elected official, Ted Farioli, the senator from state senator from Western Idaho, the counties that abut, the Oregon counties that abut Idaho, who was so strident about the local control, which is the manifestation of cannabis bigotry by elected officials. We'll be talking about that at 3 o'clock today. But he also was like, really? It's going to be legal July 1st and adults aren't going to be able to go anywhere to buy it? WTF, you know? I mean, he had that sort of an attitude. And as Floyd said yesterday, you know, a lot of the debate, you know, Floyd certainly had the attitude, as did Ted, that, and I think Ann also, that it should have happened July 1st. So when 460 was being, you know, the sausage making of 460 was picking a start date. And October 1st was picked because of the concern, like in Washington, of, opening the stores and there's nothing on the shelves. And the thinking was at least some of the fall harvest would have come in so that there would be adequate supply to be able to supply adults as well as... It's the same thinking that is going to make it so there won't be retail dispensaries until next fall. The Liquor Control Commission has said repeatedly that, you know, yeah, we're going to accept applications January 4th for all four licenses. We're going to try and issue the production licenses by the spring, the processing licenses by the summer, and the wholesale and retail licenses by the fall. By the way, if you're thinking of being a wholesaler, could you try and catch up with me sometime today? I have a client that's developing an app, a mobile app, that I think would be helpful, and we're looking for people to beta test it. But the fact is that we're not going to have adult retail stores until next fall, and so this is this one-year bridge, and just in case it takes a couple of months longer, it doesn't phase out until the end of the year. So I saw people raise their hands when Michael asked if they were a PRF. Did you get this 3-page informational bulletin that came out, everybody who's a PRF? Yes, no? Okay. So for everybody else, this informational bulletin highlights the rules that are going to become final on September 24th. And on September 24th, you'll be able to download the final rules, you'll be able to download the final posters, the things that you have to post. They note, by the way, if you're thinking of changing your floor plan, I was going to mention that at 3. If you're thinking of changing your floor plan, like because you're so excited, you think there's going to be so much more business that you're doing another cash register or something, under the existing rules, because that's a change, 10 days notice is required instead of the 5. Reiterates the limits. It reiterates, you know, that you can't sell the other products, the medicinal concentrates, extracts, edibles, topicals, or other products. By the way, let me digress just for a second. you know, back in the early days before the Medical Marijuana Act, when I would be trying medical necessity cases, the involving, you know, I had an 8-plant for an MS patient in a chair kind of horror show, and the press would come up to me and they would say, you know, God bless you for doing this work, and I just want to shout out to the folks who have been servicing the medical patients in this state and say God bless you for your work. So, they're not going to allow free giveaways, samples, otherwise giving or sharing products other than the limited products listed above, and there has to be the ID and the tax. And then this is the important thing I want everybody to be clear about. You know, although you're not required to document the name, you are required to develop a written policy that specifically outlines the steps that the dispensary will take to ensure that no more than the allowed amount of retail product is sold to one person in a day, which I think of as the, hey, dude, you were here earlier, weren't you, rule. So you have to come up, you have to come up with some kind of a policy or, you know, and one way to do that is to compare the birth dates with the birth dates you have, and unless you got twins or, I don't know, if it just happens that some two people were born on the same day, maybe you could also include their gender or, you know, whatever. You need to develop a policy that enables you consistently to say, dude, I can't. You know, you were here already. You have your quarter ounce. You have to go somewhere else to get another quarter ounce. So, the question is, why did they do a quarter ounce? Why did they not do an ounce? And I, fuck if I know, you know, it's a legislature. It's that sausage making that is, you know, somebody wanted it not at all, somebody wanted an ounce, and it was a compromise. I mean, that's my best guess. I wasn't that involved in that one. Point of sale system has to include the type of, you know, they put product, but, you know, it's medicine, the amount of the medicine, the birth date, the sale price, and the date of sale. So that is, and you're required to post the signs at the point of sale. That's the third page. And it depends what you're doing. If you're only transferring to patients, then you have to put a sign, medical marijuana patients only. If you're selling to adults also, then you have to put medical marijuana patients and persons 21 or older permitted, and no person under 21 permitted without an OMMP card. But at the point of sale, you have to post the pregnancy warning, poison prevention signs, and the color copy to educate before you recreate. So let's talk about that for a second. There is in the health authority a committee that's made up mostly of drug and alcohol addictions folks who are working on things like what's the appropriate dosage for adults. And they also looked at, cherry-picked the research on pregnancy and breastfeeding. And when I say cherry-picked, I mean to say that they excluded Nurse Melanie Dreyer's seminal study on Jamaican women that I've used in court a lot, you know, indicating that there's no issue whatsoever. So I got in touch with the National Advocates for Pregnant Women. I was asked by a reporter, what is that, a cannabis group? I said, no, it's the National Advocates for Pregnant Women. They do stuff like advocate against women who are imprisoned having to give birth shackled to the table, that kind of stuff. They advocate against laws that make it delivery of a controlled substance if you smoke a joint while you're pregnant or something. So, and they work on all of the family law issues where cannabigotry and other bigotry, you know, the whole thing about the crack babies that never really turned out to be anything kind of stuff. So, so I asked them if they would comment on this, and the executive director did. She wrote a letter, it's 3 or 4 pages, and at the end, she describes this proposed sign as gender discrimination, because it's gender discrimination. So, although you have to post the signs, there's nothing that says you can't post next to it the National Advocates for Pregnant Women say this is gender discrimination. There's nothing that prohibits you from saying the science that this is based on is faulty. There's nothing that prevents you from saying, don't be afraid, it'll be okay. There's nothing that prevents you from doing that. And if anybody gets in trouble with OHA, I'll take that one on for free, okay? You let me know. On the retail end, like I said, there is the, first of all, the OLCC, I mean, in retrospect, if we had it to do over again, and there is actually talk in the legislature about creating a cannabis commission, because the Liquor Control Commission is clearly not the right place for us. It's this bizarre thing where there's an agency and an executive director, a fellow named Steve Marks, a nice enough guy, and then there's a five-member commission of citizens, one of whom is in the liquor business, and there's nobody in the weed business yet, although that might come with time, I guess. And, you know, the chair of the commission is a fellow named Rob Patridge, who's a district attorney in Klamath County, where they've banned all of the licenses, production, processing, wholesale, and retail licenses. Not because Rob urged that. Rob, again, is not a, you know, completely unreasonable guy. But if we had it to do over again, you know, creating a cannabis commission that oversees the Liquor Control Commission and the Health Authority and the Department of Agriculture would have been a better way to go, for those of you from California who are working on drafting stuff. The biggest issue, not just for retail licenses, but also wholesale processing and production licenses, in my opinion, is the, and Anthony Johnson, I think we should stop calling him the golden child and start calling him the tie stick. Well, that's just me. It's the residency requirement. When the lawyers involved in drafting 91, Anthony Johnson, Paul Loney, Dave Kopelak, and I talked about residency, Dave, who you know is a mergers and acquisitions lawyer, and I both felt that it was unconstitutional in the first place. I mean, it's not about having a license to sell weed. It's about having a license so that if you're selling weed, you're not going to be arrested and prosecuted. And you can't deny an immunity from arrest and prosecution to somebody based on the state where they live. Hi, Doug. And second of all, it's bad public policy. It's bad public policy because inevitably, bright lawyers, and I know some, are going to figure out ways around it. And the third thing is, it for me in my practice, it feels particularly unfair because, I mean, I don't represent Philip Morris. I represent individuals and businesses, but you know, some of those are folks who've moved here less than 2 years ago and who've started businesses, and why aren't their businesses grandfathered in, and if you get a license, anyway. So I do want people to be clear on what those rules look like they're going to be. And I say that because, you know, Anthony Johnson sits on the Rules Advisory Committee, and they've met and discussed these rules already. And on Friday, they're going to be discussing the rules for the four different licenses. And they make a recommendation to the Liquor Control Commission, and as Anthony told you yesterday, he's going to continue to lobby. And Four. So we don't know for sure, but for now, it looks like, and it's okay, I got other pens. An applicant is going to mean a person or legal entity having a financial interest and who's directly involved in the operation. And then they go on to define direct involvement and to define financial interest, you know, and it's this 51% thing, and it's just going to be challenging. On the retailers, the proposed rules so far are, you know, about what you'd expect. You know, there is just the 1,000 foot from, you know, not a residential area, 1,000 foot from a school. There isn't the 1,000 foot from another facility on the statewide rules, limiting the amount of sales to what a person is allowed to possess. Going to Mike's question, you know, 1 ounce of usable, 16 ounces of infused solid, 72 ounces of infused liquid, and so on. Limiting the hours to 8 to 9, but it's going to get rid of a lot of the things that you were talking about, Mike. It's not going to, assuming that, you know, this is what's enacted, they're not going to allow giving away free samples or selling butane or other things that could be used in home extraction, because home extraction is prohibited. Require purchasing other products, sell it for less than true value, coupons or discounts, except uniform volume discounts are permitted. The price has to stay the same during the day. You know, again, it's going to require the verification of age. Again, there's going to be signage, you know, no minors permitted anywhere on the premises, no on-site consumption. And there's going to be some requirements for... that the commission is going to develop on health and safety, letting people know it has intoxicating effects and maybe habit forming. You know, Ed Rosenthal likes to say that growing marijuana may be habit forming, but not. And then should not be used by women that are pregnant or breastfeeding. Again and again, if you're required to do that signage, there's no reason to not put a sign that says this is gender discrimination. And the thing about adults. The very last thing I want to mention, if I can, in less than a minute, is that, you know, some places are regulating. I didn't bring the City of Portland's rules, but we were also in the paper today about the City of Portland's rules. You can find the City of Portland rules at portlandoregon.gov, and it's in the Office of Neighborhood Involvement, so I know it's /ONI, but there's a search bar, and if you put in marijuana, you'll get right to the rules. The proposed rules are going to be in front of the City Council on the 16th. But currently, the initial application for a dispensary is $750, and a license renewal form for a dispensary is $1,750. Now, this is not for medical, this is for retail, but that's what they're talking about. And I did go to one of the three public meetings, and it's not quite like, hey, a sex offender moved in next door, but they are going to be looking at different kinds of neighborhood notification and making sure it's okay with the neighborhood association kinds of things in Portland. I disagree with Anthony. I think each municipality is likely to adopt rules specific to its own concerns, and those are the City of Portland's concerns. Thank you very much.
Let's hear it again. Lee Berger, Michael Monarch.